I can't tell you how glad I am to see you all this morning. I've been thinking about this service and planning it and thinking about how best to pull it together for actually probably since last fall. And I really am very thrilled that you're all here to be part of this conversation about what possible social justice issue the congregation might lift up as a congregation going forward. It was not surprising at all to me to learn a couple of weeks ago at the congregational meeting that the value that rose right to the top like cream was working together in community. Right? Working together in community. That's what you say you really value most highly. And I know that that's true. I've seen you pull together the holiday fair. When holiday time came rolling around, you were all there like a well-oiled machine. There's an organizational structure that you've worked very hard over the years to put in place, that you keep evolving and working together to make even better, that provides both great leadership and lots of opportunities for people to participate, right? So there's lots of ways people can be involved in it. And you all know what you're doing, and you get good guidance about that. And you know why you're doing it, right? You know why you're doing it. And it feels great when so many people put their hands to the wheel and turn it together. There's a power, what Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams called a community-forming power. This community-forming power, when we come together, that's greater than anything any one of us can do on our own. Martin Luther King called the same kind of power soul force. Soul force. We can do great things when we do them together. And another value that rang out loud and clear during the appreciative inquiry process that we did last year provides an aspiration for your work together in community. You have said many times in different contexts that you want to work together, together being the important word here, for social justice. Unitarian Universalists, we draw from many different sources that provide voices of prophets who spoke about injustice. And I have to take just a second here to stop at that word prophet, because a lot of people go, oh, when you think of prophet, you think of like, right, what do you think of speaking like God coming from some human being's mouth, right? That's usually what people think of when they think of prophets. I think the prophetic voice, especially for us, is slightly different. And I think there is an important role for the prophetic voice, which is different from being a prophet who speaks the word of God, which has to do with how you think of God. Now, I think of God as something larger than myself, that holds it all together, something that represents that something larger that we all are working towards. So the prophetic voice, we know Martin Luther King, we know Nelson Mandela, we think of them as prophetic voices because they spoke about the way they hoped life would be for people on the earth. Not so much about what God in the sky wanted for people or people on the earth, but looking around at each other, what we hope to value. And we know what we value. We value the inherent worth and dignity of all people. We value justice, equity, and compassion in our relationships with one another. We know what we value. And that, my friends, is our prophetic voice. To speak on behalf of that worldview is our prophetic voice. And James Luther Adams, he talked about the prophethood of all believers. So if you believe in our values, we have a responsibility to use that prophetic voice in the public square, in how we organize our congregations, in what we choose to do together. In Hebrew scripture, the prophet Isaiah cautioned people not to sit around in sackcloth and ashes fasting, hoping that God would find their fast worthy of sacrifice. An interesting reference during the beginning of Lent here, for those of you who are paying attention to that. No, Isaiah, he went on to talk about this larger prophetic voice that connects each of us to all that is. He says, "Is not the fast I choose to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thong of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your kin. Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly." Our faith in action. He's speaking about the values for a better world that connect us all. Martin Luther King, a more contemporary prophet, again, speaking on the voice of interconnection and interdependence, said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Injustice anywhere is a threat to injustice everywhere." Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm the worth and dignity of all people. We know our lives are bound together in an interdependent web of life. Each and every one of us is called to open our eyes and our hearts to injustice and to act using our power to empower the powerless. Using our power to empower the powerless. Our Reading for Change book group has been quite an experience. And that's several times that we've met together. We're now reading a book called Justice on Earth. The subtitle is People of Faith Working at the Intersection of Race, Class, and Environment. Last night I was, well, it wasn't last night because I didn't write this last night, but this week I was reading an essay by Pamela Spahr where she talked about the importance of prophetic imagination, this idea of using our values as a vision, as a lens through which we see and can imagine the world, in boldly and unequivocally bringing UU values to the public square. And she quotes Naomi Klein. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Naomi Klein. She's talk about a prophetic voice. She writes, "Fundamentally, the task is to articulate not just an alternative set of policy proposals, but an alternative worldview to rival the one at the heart of the ecological crisis. Embedded in interdependence rather than hyper-individualism, reciprocity rather than dominance, and cooperation rather than hierarchy." Basically, Pamela Spahr in this article, is saying this is the work of a faith community to really be able to articulate this vision of the kind of world that we seek, a faith community like this community. UUs can be kind of squeamish, I've noticed, about their role in the public square. There is a lot of confusion between the separation of church and state and advocating for policy or this vision, this prophetic imagination, based on our faith values. We're not allowed to be partisan, but boy, are we called to talk about this vision of the world we seek and how it impacts policies that are being created. It's a very wide swath of being involved in the public square. That little partisan piece is just over here. You can't advocate for a candidate. That's pretty much it. All this stuff over here, talking about what's happening in the world and issues and being out in the public square and marching and working together to create change is all really good stuff that we're called to do. And so this morning, I attempted to create this little faith in action poll. This is in your order of service. And as a way to attempt, and granted it's not the perfect way, But it is my way for this morning, so you're with me this morning, so we're going on this journey together. I created a list of some social justice, not exhaustive by any means, issues. Most of these which I believe this congregation has some connection to, either because they are programs that the congregation supports, they are Unitarian Universalist study action issues, which if you don't know what that is, it's a process that Unitarian Universalists go through at a national level to pick issues for action and take 3 years to study before they actually decide what they're going to do and say about that issue, and issues that are attached to things like prison reform and advocacy, the Women in Transition program, and SHARE, and Anne Marie House, issues around homelessness. So that's where a lot of these issues came from. And they are not exhaustive. And you can see at the bottom there's a write-in, right? A place to write in your issue if it's not there. And in a few minutes, I'm going to invite you to just rank order these. It's not the easiest thing to do, but maybe you don't even have to go all the way down. You can rank order 5. Start at 5 and work your way back to 1. But rank order these. And the very first thing I want you to do, though, is put your name on this. This isn't an anonymous thing, right? I want you to put your name on this. And if you really are interested in helping to organize a group here around this issue, I want you to put a star by the issue. And if you're interested and can, help put together some kind of a Faith in Action steering committee here at the church. I want you to note that too. And your role in that group would be to provide resources around these issues for the congregation and guidance. So you can think about that, but I want to take just a few minutes to go through at least a couple of these. And I really want to start at the top with gender and sexuality, because the Welcoming Congregation Program in UU Churches is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year, which is quite a milestone. The fact that gender and sexuality issues have been part of our intentional welcome in UU congregations for 30 years is a very cool thing. This congregation became a Welcoming Congregation in 1994. 15 years ago. It's been a while, right?
No. Not 15. 20,
oh, yes, 25. Sorry. Even longer. Wow. Math is not my strong suit anyways. And thank you. A long time. Which actually makes my point even more. So what my point is that it's been quite a while since this congregation really took Welcoming Congregation out of its little wrapper and looked at it again. I have to say that, you know, I don't know if I've ever actually stood up here and said, "Hi guys, I'm a lesbian." You know that, right? I mean, it's not a secret. I don't need to come out to you. But it's not usually part of how I present myself or the issues that I champion, or it's not what I lead with, right? But I have to tell you that as a lesbian who's part of this community, I don't really see a lot of evidence of an active Welcoming Congregation program in the congregation. And I don't think that you mean for it to be that way. I think you think you're welcoming. I think you think you know. But recent events at the UUA, in the UU World magazine, and what we're experiencing once again at the national level are letting us know that none of us know, really, and that we take a lot for granted in what we think that we know about the ever-evolving gender and sexual identities of people on this planet. They continue to change. They continue to evolve. Some ways people have identified have been around since time immemorial, and we just haven't really lifted them up as being part of the conversation. And that's what's happening. I don't know how many of you are familiar with there's an article that was published in the UU World magazine that was called Beyond GLB, Gay, Lesbian, and Bi, dot, sort of dot, dot, dot. And the issue was written by a cisgendered woman who, which means somebody born a woman who identifies with a woman, if you're not familiar with that term, about her experience with her daughter's transgender girlfriend, right? And so the article was well-intentioned, but even before it was published, there were transgendered people in our denomination who said that it was probably not a great idea to publish it because it was not, first of all, not written by a transgender person. And this is a major article in our major magazine. This is our voice in the world. And I think I've ever seen a feature article about transgender issues in our UU world before. So to have the very first big article written by a straight woman about transgender issues was not good, for one thing. And some of the language in it is not appropriate, and it's actually really hurtful to transgender people. And there have been some really articulate responses from transgender and non-binary people to this. And the editor of the UU World published an apology, a public apology, which is now on the website for what happened. And it just, all over again, it's like we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes it takes something like this to lift it up. But the fact that we do need to keep looking at these things comes up over and over and over again. And so, even before this happened, the UUA has recommended that people who are welcoming, congregations that are welcoming, go through a process of recommitting to that welcome. They're calling it the five practices of renewal. Is that up there, Nancy? Okay. And so they're inviting, on an annual basis, they're inviting congregations, welcoming congregations, to first become a welcoming congregation, and then to focus on worship services that highlight and lift up GLBTQ issues, and then to honor welcoming days of observance, like Transgender Day of Remembrance, for example, like World AIDS Day has been one that's been really important to lift up, and I don't know if you all have done that. I haven't done that with you since I've been here. They're also preparing a welcoming congregation learning module so congregations can continue to learn and grow together and keep these issues in the fore. And they're asking congregations to support a welcoming project on an annual basis so that you keep these issues sort of at the surface and you're really actively working with how is your welcome? How are you doing? How are we doing? And I actually think this is a really good model for any of these issues, no matter what your issue is. And the same thing is happening with Green Sanctuary. They are inviting Green Sanctuary congregations. Let's see if I do any better with Green Sanctuary. That's also 30 years Green Sanctuary's been around. And this congregation has been Green Sanctuary congregation since, I believe, 2012. I looked it up. It's on the website. And like welcoming congregation issues, things in with the environment and conservation and climate are just evolving at such a quick rate that it was never meant to be a one-and-done thing. It wasn't meant to be a certificate that you hang on the wall. It was meant to be something that you kept working on and developed annual goals around how you were going to be a green sanctuary and keep engaging in these issues. It's a very similar thing to what they're outlining for welcoming congregation renewal now. And so I would, as you go through these issues, you can say, well, maybe these are some of the good steps we could take in terms of education and developing projects. And you can't just develop a project without the context, the larger context, because you don't really understand the context then. So you got to have the education piece and the action piece. Without the education piece, it's really community service, which is different from social justice and understanding the bigger picture. A lot of what you all do now are community service projects, collecting things for SHARE. So who are the people, who are the clients of SHARE? What's going on in Milford and the surrounding towns that people need to use share the services at Share? That's the larger context. So when you're thinking about these issues, they're slightly different from a project. Does that make sense? Okay. And so you can see as you go down the list, I didn't group them together. The two study action issues the UUA has put forward right now one is a racial justice issue on doing intersectional white supremacy. And I know there's a lot of interest in anti-racism work here because we've had so many people get together to talk about the book White Fragility. Still really kind of blown away that, you know, we had over 20 people come out to talk about that one book. And so I know that people are wrestling with that. It's a personal thing and a political thing and a collective thing and an institutional thing. It's at all levels. And the other one, and I know there's a lot of people here who are involved with the idea of democracy, right? So the most current study action issue is called Democracy Uncorrupted, to look at our democratic process and how it's being impacted by the corporate world, for one thing, and to really kind of see what you could do and learn about that bigger picture. And the book that we read last year, Daring Democracy, addressed all those issues in such a clear way. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, it's a really good thing to read, Daring Democracy. I really highly recommend that. So you'll see here that there's issues attached to poverty and economic justice, homelessness. I know people are at the Nashua Soup Kitchen right now. They're not here because they're in Nashua serving the meal. And so what is that? What is hunger about in our region? That's the issue. The action is, you know, the community supper and other meal programs and providing people with food. But what about food security? There's a lot of issues that go into the whole hunger issue, access to food. And so you'll read down through some of these. And so I'd invite you, you know, I'm going to just take a minute or two now, but I'd invite you to fill this out and put it in the offering plate when it comes around. And we're going to distribute it as widely as possible. I may tweak it a little before we put it on the website and send it to the whole congregation, depending on what your issues, your write-in issues are. But I'm really appreciative of your help in helping to sort of develop this kind of a poll to solicit interest. And you may not this year get to the point where you know what your primary focus is. The other really important thing about social justice issues is they're all interrelated. A lot of them are interrelated. And so you pick an entree, you pick a point of entry, and you're going to find as you go deeper and deeper, you're going to find homelessness and hunger and economic justice and environmental justice all intersect around racism, classism, right? So you're always going to be looking at all of the issues. You just have to pick a way in. Okay, so what I'm going to ask you to do is to start with, to pick five. Pick your top five. So you might go through and check your top five, and then from 5 to 1, rank order, the least important of those five gets a 5. And then the next most important one gets a 4, and so on until you get to your number one choice, which is a 3. I mean a 1. Okay. Time change. Snowstorm. I fell on my way to church 3 times this morning. Okay, so I think I might have jarred something loose up here. I don't know, but thank you for your patience. Thank you for your patience. So just let me say this in closing this part of the service is that it's so hard and so it can be so overwhelming to think about everything that's happening in the world these days. And to try to think about tackling any of these issues is like, oh my gosh, how can we possibly have an impact or even understand what's going on with these. But I have to tell you, our prophetic vision, our values, our principles do give us a way in. We don't have to solve the problem. But if we go to the table and we say, now, who's impacted by this? Who's not at the table? Who's not welcome? Who doesn't have access? That's usually a big part of where some of the answers to these lie. So the idea, it's not an issue, but part of how to reframe this is to think about, what does radical inclusive hospitality look like? For us as a congregation, for us as a community, for us as a nation, for us as a world. What does a world look like where everybody has a place and a voice and access? We do have an important message. We do have an extremely powerful motivation for doing this work together. And I do want to take a few moments. We don't have a lot of time, but it's snowing outside. You guys don't have anywhere to go right this minute, right? All right. What I wanted to do was, I just want to come around with the microphone. And if you feel really passionately about one of these issues, I would like for you to speak to why you think this congregation should take this. Not you personally, not you and your work outside of here, but why do you think this congregation should take on this issue, if anybody is feeling so moved to do that. Any takers? It's okay if you don't want. Oh.